Welcome into Real Pod Wednesdays. Dan Hope joined by Andy Anders on NFL Draft Eve. We will spend some time later in the show talking about Ohio State's NFL draft class and making some predictions for what the week could look like for those former Buckeyes. But we said last week we thought we'd be talking more about transfer movement for the Ohio State football team on this week's show, but we really don't have anything to talk about, at least as we're sitting here recording on Tuesday afternoon. It's been a very quiet post-spring transfer cycle for Ohio State so far. Still a week left to go in the post-spring transfer window, so still the potential for that to change. But so far, I think it's gone about as well as you could hope for Ohio State in terms of a lack of outgoing attrition.
Yeah, no one that you'd expect to be even second on at their position on the depth chart has left Ohio State thus far, which is certainly more than I thought we were going to be saying at this point, given what was out there about people, you know, saying this portal, this spring window is going to be crazier than last year's spring window. Hasn't borne fruit for Ohio State thus far, really. Cedric Hawkins, not a guy who maybe certainly wasn't going to play at safety this year, it felt like, just based on the depth chart, the guys in front of him, barring some serious injuries, and potentially was never really going to carve out a significant role. Dallin Hayden, someone that, you know, you and I wanted to see maybe get more carries at the tail end of last year, you know, some of the injury concerns in the running back room and everything that went on there. But with Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins topping out the running back depth chart, I think you feel pretty confident about what Ohio State has there. You know, you worry about maybe the third guy being a freshman, but I think having a Cadillac as a third running back is a pretty luxury item you can have as a football team. So both of those transfers don't feel like they're going to hurt the team too much going into the fall. And really, it's just been a super quiet, low-key kind of transfer window for Ohio State.
Yeah, and honestly, it's been a pretty low-key transfer portal window across the nation so far. I mean, there was, you know, a lot of talk, some, you know, vague tweets from national college football personalities leading up to this post-spring window of, oh, this is going to be crazy. You won't believe some of the rumors I've heard. And so far, we have not seen that come to pass. I mean, again, things could still change over the next week, so I don't want to get ahead of ourselves or say anything too bold. But, you know, for the first week of this post-spring transfer window, I don't really think there's been anybody that's like a major name in terms of someone who a lot of college football fans would know entering the transfer portal. And so it seems like the vast majority of the major movement happened in the December transfer window. And that's what you would expect, because certainly if you're going to a new school and looking to earn a major role, you're going to have a better chance to do that if you're able to go through spring practices than if you aren't able to go through spring practices. So I think that's one factor there. You know, maybe another factor is, you know, teams like Ohio State, I mean, already spent so much NIL money in the first transfer window, but how much do they really have available to go out and make more big swings in this second transfer window? Now, I think there's still a possibility that, you know, some stuff is happening in back channels, not necessarily for Ohio State, but just across the nation. There could still be players that are maybe waiting to see what the market might be for them before they actually enter the portal. Because once you enter the portal, you don't know if you'll be able to come back. I think we've seen some of that on the basketball side where, you know, even a few weeks after the season has been over, you're still seeing some big names trickle into the portal. And so when we come back next week, when the portal window is officially closed, we'll have more of a full picture of what this portal window has been like. But it certainly does not seem as of now like it's going to get anywhere close to the craziness that some people were expecting going into it. And I think the change that was ratified by the NCAA on Monday, in which now players can transfer multiple times and not have to sit out as long as they're in good academic standing, I think to some degree that actually helps in terms of lowering the attrition in this post-spring window. Because in the past, a player who didn't like their standing on the depth chart might have been more inclined to say, well, I need to transfer now so that I can go compete for a job next year. I can be in a better position for next year. Whereas now, you know, if unless you're going to go somewhere, you know, like a Dallin Hayden, for example, he looks like he's going to be the starting running back at Colorado. He was going to be the number three running back at best at Ohio State. So that made sense. For other guys where maybe it's a situation of, I don't know how much playing time I'm going to get at Ohio State this year, but I'm not necessarily going to be guaranteed a starting job at another big school either. Is there that much upside between transferring now and, you know, leaving a team that has these national championship expectations versus transferring in December, January, when, you know, when teams will really be looking to make their big moves to set up their roster for 2025? And so, you know, I think that's a factor in it too, where, you know, I think that December transfer window is certainly going to continue to be the big transfer window in terms of movement in college football. Now, you know, as it pertains to Ohio State, I think we would both agree you'd still like to see Ohio State add a transfer offensive lineman here. I mean, if Ohio State doesn't have significantly more attrition than what it's already had, we're not going to see Ohio State add a lot of transfers because they won't have a lot of spots. But I think that's certainly still that one position that you'd like to see Ohio State add a starting caliber player through the transfer portal would be on the offensive line, specifically at right guard. The problem is, because it has been a quiet transfer cycle so far, I don't really think there's any offensive lineman out there right now that you can point at and say that guy would be a plug and play upgrade on Ohio State's offensive line. And so that's going to be somewhat contingent on whether the right players from other schools enter the transfer portal over the next week.
Yeah, it almost feels like last year where it's mainly guys that, you know, you don't necessarily feel are Ohio State caliber starters. Obviously, Ohio State got an offensive lineman that ultimately started for them last spring window in Josh Simmons, but they're in large part, the spring window the last year was guys that lost position battles, guys that weren't of that Ohio State starting caliber entering the portal window. And despite reports to the contrary that there was going to be all this movement, that's not what's come to fruition in this cycle. And so, you know, you want to go out and try to upgrade what you have at that right guard spot in particular in this portal cycle. But if it's not there, then you've just got to let the competition play out between Tager Shabola, Luke Montgomery, even Carson Hensman, you know, the guys we saw mixing it up that we've discussed before at that right guard spot, and roll with what you have. I think if you're going out to try and get depth, that's not as much what you can toy with right now in this room. You want to keep the competition going between those guys and try to figure out, you know, who that person can be. If you can get someone who can compete at the right guard spot, you go do it. But if it's, you know, if you're getting a Vic Cutler, not to single a guy out, then I don't think it's necessarily worth the scholarship, right? You have to get someone who's going to come in and battle for that spot. Now, what's been much crazier this spring window is basketball. And obviously, the spring window for basketball is more like the fall window for football. You're getting guys transferring out right after the season. But I think the biggest case study maybe for this Ohio State team of just how crazy the transfer portal has gotten in this NIL era is the fact that Roddy Gale Jr. is heading to Michigan. We've got a player, a starter for Ohio State this year, not just a player, a starter for Ohio State this year, crossing the lines of the rivalry and ultimately swapping sides to go to Ann Arbor, to the animosity of many fans, I am sure. And a guy that, you know, this is going to forever draw comparisons. They were already going to be drawn between Jake Diebler and Dusty May because of the nature of them being thought to be the final two candidates in that coaching search. But now, especially when Dusty May is taking a starter from Jake Diebler's roster, those games are going to draw a lot of attention next year between Ohio State and Michigan, and how Roddy performs in those games especially. There's going to be a subject of a lot of narratives, Dan, you know, in our world. And that just crazy to think even a few years ago of something like that happening. But That's the era we live in now.
Yeah, from an objective, like, 20-foot view standpoint, this is good for the rivalry. Like, this is good for the rivalry. Michigan hiring the coach who a lot of people thought was the front runner to be Ohio State's coach is good for the rivalry. Because as much as we talk up the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry, it's not the same in basketball as it is in football. It's you could argue that Michigan isn't even necessarily Ohio State's top rival in basketball. Some people view Indiana as Ohio State's top rival in basketball. A lot of Michigan fans view Michigan State as their top rival in basketball. So I think this rivalry needs some juice. And this certainly puts some juice in a rivalry when you have a player going, again, not a end of a bench player. This is not a, you know, Joey Velasquez, who was a walk-on special teamer for Michigan transferring to Ohio State football. This is a starter from Ohio State basketball transferring to now be a starter for Michigan basketball. So, you know, it certainly adds a lot of juice to the rivalry, and it certainly heightens the comparisons that are going to be drawn between Jake Diebler and Dusty May, because, you know, we've talked about it. One of the biggest pluses with hiring Jake Diebler was supposed to be roster retention. Now, with the surprise news that came on Sunday morning that Felix Okpara entered the transfer portal, you know, we talked about it a few weeks ago. We felt like there were five guys that Jake Diebler really needed to keep. Three of those guys are now gone. Felix Okpara, Roddy Gale, Scotty Middleton. Did manage to retain Bruce Thornton, did manage to retain Devin Royal, and has brought in, you know, three strong transfer additions in Michi Johnson, Aaron Bradshaw, and Micah Parrish. But there's still a lot to be written here for Jake Diebler. And I think when you lose a guy like Roddy Gale to Michigan, that only heightens the pressure now that, you know, with these two remaining transfer spots that you have available, you've got to go hit another home run or two, because I think the pressure is going to be on Jake Diebler to perform right away. I think stuff like Roddy Gale going to Michigan only increases that pressure, because the idea that, okay, promoting Jake Diebler would increase roster retention, increase stability, again, was not the only reason he was promoted, but it was a factor. And that hasn't exactly gone as planned, which, to clarify, I don't necessarily blame Jake Diebler for that, because I think it just speaks to, like you said, how crazy the transfer portal world is now. I mean, you can look at teams all across the country, and this is happening everywhere. I mean, you look at a team like Duke. I mean, they've lost a ton of guys to the transfer portal. So this is happening all over the country. I don't mean it as an indictment of Jake Diebler that this has happened, but it does take away one of those things that you viewed as a clear positive of hiring Jake Diebler. So I think he's gotten off to a good start in terms of bringing in transfer talent. Now you've got two more open scholarships. You've got to make good use of those. And then you're going to be expected to perform in year one. I mean, Michigan is certainly building a roster with the moves they're making that makes you think Michigan should be a lot better next season than it was this past season. And so Ohio State is also going to need to rise to the occasion, because it's certainly going to be compared to its rival.
Yeah, the two key words you mentioned there, damn pressure and expectations. You know, at the core of all of this is that Ohio State went on a bit of a run at the end of this last season. And now you have what was returning from that. You had enough pieces that, hey, it was kind of fair to expect going into this year, even though it's year one under a new head coach, because you're keeping that continuity with the program, a guy who was, you know, the top assistant, then became the interim and is promoted to the full-time head coach. I think most people would say it was fair to expect that this should be an NCAA tournament team for Ohio State. You know, they're in a bit of a win right now mode, despite the transition that is occurring. And that's why there's this added pressure and expectation that you need to build for that right away. And I think Jake Diebler isn't shying away from that, that he wants to go out and get this team to the tournament this year, compete this year. So now with these two losses, especially of Roddy Gale Jr., of Felix Okpara, but also Scotty Middleton to some extent, you are in a position where you have more work to do to get this team to a place where it can be an NCAA tournament caliber team, an NCAA tournament caliber team that could even go on a run in that tournament. Felix really was the more proven asset you had at center between him and Aaron Bradshaw when you start to look at these two players. Bradshaw, obviously a five-star talent, but I mean, Felix was one of the best shot blockers in the country. Felix was your most proven rebounder. He was developing as a scorer. That's the one advantage, I think, when you kind of compare these two side by side. You would have loved to have the Twin Towers in the front court, and obviously this came as a surprise for Ohio State. They were wanting to have both Felix and Aaron in the fold, even expecting to for a while. Aaron's actually, in terms of the pace of his scoring relative to the minutes he played, scored at a higher rate than Felix, but Felix rebounded and shot blocked at a much higher rate. And again, I don't think you can do much better than Felix Okpar as a shot blocker. Maybe Aaron Bradshaw can develop into someone of a similar caliber as a shot blocker. He's taller. They have similarly elite vertical leaping abilities, but you're not going to succeed Felix as a shot blocker, I don't think, with Aaron Bradshaw. And so that rim protection now becomes paramount to address in the transfer portal in terms of depth. And that's what they will now have to look at moving forward, in addition to getting another guy on the wing who can replace some of what Jameson Battle gave you as a shooter, maybe as a scorer especially, and also give you some of that rebounding presence again, because this is a physical conference where rebounding is very important. And so you've got to address those things both with a center addition and that power forward spot that was already a need before Felix left. But I think it's also increased a little bit now that you've lost a guy who is a returning starter.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see exactly what kind of player they bring in to replace Felix Okpara here. Will they bring in another true center, or maybe they look for somebody with a little more 4-5 versatility who could maybe play alongside Aaron Bradshaw more effectively than an Aaron Bradshaw Felix Okpara pairing? You know, you look at some of the names that, you know, Ohio State has been connected to over the past couple days since Felix Okpara's transfer: Trey Edmonds from UTSA, Jonas Adu from Tennessee, Sean Stewart from Duke, Andrew Carr from Wake Forest. A lot of those guys are kind of like big power forwards who could play center, but could also play before. And I think having some versatility there would be a good thing. It allows more, options for Jake Diebler in terms of playing big, playing small. You know, if you have option where you can play those two big guys in the post, but you could also have lineups where you don't have a true like in the box center. You could have more floor spacing with, you know, a guy who's big enough to be a five, but is also kind of that stretch player who can give you more in other areas of the floor. And so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, ultimately who Ohio State ends up getting to fill that spot. You know, as you mentioned, you know, the two spots they have left, there are separate targets for them, but they're also somewhat interconnected in the sense that the other spot could go to a player who could also potentially end up being your starting four, replacing Jameson Battle. Certainly, it feels like Trey Townsend of Oakland, as we sit here right now on Tuesday afternoon, is the top target for that spot. He's a guy who averaged over 17 points a game last year, so I think if Ohio State is able to close the deal with Trey Townsend, that would be a strong addition for the Buckeyes to add some scoring punch that I think they very much need still in that front court. But certainly as well, you know, you're going to need some guys who can replace that rebounding and defensive presence that Felix Okpara provided. And Trey Townsend can help with that. He was a very effective rebounder at Oakland, so he can certainly help with that. But I think getting another guy who's more of a true post player who can, you know, make a difference as both a rebounder and a shot blocker is going to be important too. Because like you said, Aaron Bradshaw has a ton of upside, but he didn't play that much at Kentucky last year. And so there's still some question marks there on Aaron Bradshaw. You know, can he be a guy who's a 30 minutes per game kind of player at center? Right now, we don't know that.
Right. And the player A that you get might influence who player B is, right? The first transfer might influence the second. I think, you know, Trey Townsend seems to be someone they're closing in on, canceled his visit to Louisville after taking his Ohio State visit. So you like your chances with the guy when he's your last visit. I think that, you know, Trey is a smaller guy. He's only 6'6", but the rebounding numbers are some of the best of any of these targets Ohio State's looking at. Averaged more than 8 boards per game each of the last two seasons, was Oakland's top rebounder, again, despite that stature. But he does so many things on the floor for you. Their leading passer, despite playing a forward, led the team in assists, averaged more than a steal per game. You know, not a gifted shot blocker, but a guy who is really good defensively, sort of all around, and can guard maybe a 3 or a 4, kind of has some of that defensive versatility that, again, Jake Diebler, versatility is something that's very important to him. In conversations with him about building this roster, he wants guys who can do multiple things. Townsend can do a lot of different things. The one thing he can't do as much is shoot a 3-ball, which is something that you want to address with this roster. They don't have a lot of it currently. Micah Parrish is a guy who has a background. You know, he had 3 seasons shooting right around 35% from 3. This year was down at about 31%. You would hope from a rebound from him. But if you're looking for that stretch guy, that's not going to be Townsend. By the same token, though, Townsend also isn't a rim protector, just because of his size. So I think if you end up getting Townsend, again, we talk about player A influencing player B, it's going to be that physical center that follows it up. And then maybe the strategy of the team has to shift to one that doesn't space the floor as much if, you know, Townsend, you're starting 4 with Bradshaw at the 5, or Bradshaw did show some shooting capabilities too, so maybe they're looking for more development from him in that area. That's just, again, the directions you can go with this, and maybe it's Tucker Anderson that you look at, another guy who visited Ohio State, definitely someone capable of shooting the 3-ball, was over 38% while scoring 14.5 points per game this season. Just all the different directions you can go at that power forward spot and the versatility, which will then influence what you do with the other forward position. And it's also interesting just to say that, hey, they're this dead set on pursuing 2 forwards when you've only got 4 true guards, true blue guards on the roster. But I think that speaks to the development of where they feel Tace and Chapman will be next year, how high they are on Judy Mobley coming in as a freshman. And it's clear that behind the scenes, they're confident Micah Parrish can handle a lot of the responsibilities that a guard has, ball handling, playmaking, again, hopefully getting some shooting back, rebounding to form from what he did this year. So just in terms of roster construction, the first player they add next will be very telling for whoever that second player is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in NFL draft mode this week, and you almost kind of think of a conversation that we always have at the NFL draft in terms of drafting for value versus need. And I think there's some of that here, too, in terms of roster management with the transfer portal, in terms of, you know, you can draw up a blueprint of, like, this is the player we need to fill this hole. But to some degree, it's just about going out and getting the best players. And so, you know, you hear coaches say it all the time. We don't bring in players to fit our system. We build our system around the players. And, you know, we will learn how effectively Jake Diebler can do that in year one. But I think that's part of it too, is you can't try to just, you know, fit square pegs in round holes, right? You've got to go out and get the best players available, the players who you think are the best fit for your culture in terms of what they can offer to your team, and then build your system around the talent that you're able to assemble.
Absolutely. And that's what makes this roster building offseason so interesting to me for Jake Diebler is, you know, it's one thing to say you have this blueprint of how you want the program to look, but I think a lot of great coaches will tell you, you don't choose a scheme, like you said, and recruit players or include transfers to fit that scheme. You get great players and build a scheme around the talent that you have. I think those are always how the best teams are constructed, regardless of sport. I think that's true of football. That's true of basketball. That's what made Ryan Day a great offensive coordinator on the football field for all the numbers he put up in past years, is that we saw him roll through a lot of different styles of offense depending on who his quarterback was, what he had on the line, what he had at receiver, what he had at running back. The same is going to be true on the basketball court. One guy that was eliminated from contention real quick, again, going back to Michigan, Sam Walters was an Ohio State target, visited this weekend. He will be a Michigan Wolverine next year. So that's one power forward to take off the board for Ohio State. But regardless, this offseason, obviously critical for Jake Diebler. And I think you really, if Trey Townsend's the guy and that's the guy you're highest on, I think you take him. And shooting, pardon my French, be damned.
Well, as I mentioned, it is NFL draft week. 9 members of last year's Ohio State football team are in the 2024 NFL draft. Marvin Harrison Jr., Mike Hall, Cade Stover, Tommy Eichenberg, Josh Proctor, Steel Chambers, Matt Jones, Mayan Williams, and Xavier Johnson. Ohio State has had at least 5 players selected in 10 consecutive drafts. I think that streak should continue. It might not necessarily be much more than that. You look at the guys who are in the draft class this year. Certainly Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be a first-round pick. Mike Hall should safely be a day 2 pick. Cade Stover, Tommy Eichenberg, those guys should go in the middle rounds of the draft. Josh Proctor, most mock drafts have him being selected. It's more of a mixed bag on the other guys. Steel Chambers, Xavier Johnson, Matt Jones, Mayan Williams. They do show up in some mock draft, but they're not unanimously projected to be selected. And so Ohio State could have as many as 9 draft picks. I think probably the safer projection is that Ohio State is probably going to have somewhere between 5 to 7 NFL draft picks. I think overall, because we're so accustomed to seeing Ohio State with draft classes that have, you know, double digit players or multiple first round picks, this draft class feels a little bit underwhelming by Ohio State standards. But at the same time, Ohio State is still very likely going to have a top 5 overall pick in Marvin Harrison Jr., who, if he does go in the top 5, will become the highest drafted wide receiver in Ohio State history.
Right. And there's a reason that it's a thinner draft class. I mean, you had a glut of guys who would have been in that day 2 range that came back for their senior seasons. I mean, you know, Denzel Burke, JT Tuimoloau, Jack Sawyer. These are guys that would have been like second, third round guys that decided to come back and give it another go. So it's thin for a reason. And there's obviously not some sort of talent deficiency at Ohio State at the moment. And that's true when you look at the 2024 roster. But focusing on the draft again, you know, I think that there's still a lot of intriguing prospects for NFL GMs to look at beyond Marvin Harrison. I think the top one, I've always been the guy banging on the table for Mike Hall. Super speed. You talk about one of the fastest D tackles in the draft, has that fantastic athletic profile. He was called Baby Aaron Donald for a reason. And I think a guy that never unlocked his true potential in terms of production at Ohio State because he was never fully healthy and fully playing the 3-tech spot that I think is his best position moving forward. There's a reason for that. Tyleek Williams was fantastic this year for Ohio State. I'm not knocking Larry Johnson's decision to use Mike Hall more in that one technique and play Tyleek at the 3, but I do think that 3 technique spot is where Mike Hall is going to fit into an NFL defense, and that's going to unlock a lot of his potential specifically as a pass rusher. That is where I think he's going to make some waves at the next level and really, I think, be a value pick for one of these teams on day 2.
Yeah, I think the upside there is very high, and I think because of that, I think there's a very good chance we will hear Mike Hall's name called in the second round. You know, going into last year, we certainly thought there was a possibility Mike Hall would be a first round pick coming out of a year because of that potential he had. Like you said, he never really played up to that full potential, didn't put up the kind of numbers that he would have needed to become that first round pick. But I do believe that there's a very good chance that, you know, we're going to hear Mike Hall's name called in the second round because I think he's had a great pre-draft process. I mean, he ran a 4.75 40 at Ohio State's pro day. He was a Senior Bowl practice player of the week. I think he's shown how gifted he is during this pre-draft process. And it just takes one team to feel confident that, hey, if we utilize him right, we can take his game to another level from what we've seen. We've seen those flashes. If he can get used in the right role and you know they play him, and he could play up to that level that we've seen him at his best at on a consistent basis, you know, he has the potential to be a star.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you're talking at the top of this draft too, Marvin Harrison, I think it's going to be interesting to see if he is out ultimately the first receiver off the board. I think we're both of the opinion he's the most talented in the draft, but do NFL teams see it that way? I think it's clear that, you know, the Cardinals are likely to take a receiver in that four spot. And it's interesting too, how the dichotomy has shifted in recent years, just generally in the draft. I think the premium now placed on receivers and getting elite skill talent has increased in recent years in the NFL, where you looked at, you know, more linemen in those positions because of just how much pressure it can take off of a quarterback, off of an offensive line to have that elite weapon. And, you know, not to pat my own NFL team on the back here, but the Bengals, I think, in some way set that trend by taking Ja'Marr Chase instead of Penei Sewell back a few years ago in the draft at that sixth spot, where many of them wanted. I mean, I was even one of the ones shouting, "Hey, protect Joe Burrow, please, please. He's coming off of this injury." I was so scared. And man, was I wrong. Ja'Marr Chase ended up obviously turning into a superstar, and much of what the Bengals have done over the past 2 years turning that franchise around has been weapons driven. And I think other NFL teams have followed that blueprint, done that blueprint. You know, they certainly weren't the only ones to kind of take that approach, and you've seen more receivers taken at the top of the draft. I don't think that's to say that Marvin wouldn't be taken at the top of a lot of drafts because he's that supreme a talent, but I will be interested to see if he's the first receiver off the board in this draft, because while we felt certain about that a few months ago, there seems to have been some, you know, Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze conversation entering the fold since. So I have him going fourth overall to the Cardinals. I don't know where you stand, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, there's three studs at receiver in this draft, and I think they're all going to be top 10 picks because of what you said about how the value on that position throughout the league has increased in recent years. I will still be surprised if Marvin is not the first non-quarterback drafted. I think he's the best prospect in this draft. I think most people agree that he is the best prospect in this draft. And I do believe that ultimately the Arizona Cardinals will draft him. I don't rule out the possibility that they could trade down. I think the ideal scenario would probably be to do the same thing they did last year with Paris Johnson, is trade down and then move back up and still get Marvin Harrison Jr. That's a risky play. My feeling is there's probably some Ohio State fans out there, but if the Cardinals trade down and somebody takes someone else, there's going to be some uneasiness among Ohio State fans, because that could mean Marvin Harrison Jr. going to play for Jim Harbaugh in Los Angeles. And so I'm going to guess that the majority of Ohio State fans would like to see the Arizona Cardinals draft Marvin Harrison Jr. and take that possibility off the table. You mentioned your Cincinnati Bengals. I will give a little teaser here for my mock draft that you know, may or may not be on 11warriors.com by the time you're listening to this podcast. And that is that I have the Cincinnati Bengals drafting Cade Stover in the third round. What do you think of that pick, Andy?
I would like it. They certainly need a tight end, although I'm hoping Brock Bowers falls to them and they get him in the first round. As rare and as risky as it is to take a tight end in the first round, you know, we've seen hits and misses there, taking a tight end that early. But personally, if they don't take Bowers in the first round and they address one of their other needs, I'd be for taking Stover in the third. I'm okay with that. I think he showed his potential, his upside as a receiver. And I don't think blocking is as important from a tight end in the Cincinnati offense. And, you know, not to say, I think I'm higher on Stover as a blocker than others, but, you know, he certainly doesn't have a reputation as a block first guy. I'd be in favor. I'd approve of a third round pick from my Bengals for Cade Stover.
My expectation is Mike Hall will be the second Buckeye drafted. Cade Stover will be the third Buckeye drafted. I think Tommy Eichenberg is likely to be the fourth Buckeye drafted, probably in that fourth round range. I think that feels about right for Tommy and what he is as a prospect. And I expect Josh Proctor to be comfortably selected as well. His projections have ranged from, you know, the fifth to the seventh round, but I think fifth round feels about right for Josh Proctor based on how well he played this past season. He may get knocked by some NFL teams because he's already 25 years old and he does have an injury history, but the way he played last season, I think showed that, you know, he's an NFL caliber safety. He's somebody who has a lot of special teams experience. And so I think Josh Proctor goes in the fifth round. What do you think, Andy?
Fifth round's ambitious. I could see it. I'm projecting more sixth round for Proctor just because I think NFL teams maybe don't get to see as much of what Josh Proctor did as we did. I'm super high on Josh Proctor personally. I think someone's going to get a steal there. But for me, I think NFL teams, he'll probably, just with the athletic traits, everything, he'll probably end up in that sixth round range. But I'm confident, as you are, that he gets drafted because of the production that he put up in his final year, because of some of the things he showed, and the potential there, how he can contribute on special teams, all those things you said.
The other four Buckeyes in the draft: Steel Chambers, Matt Jones, Mayan Williams, and Xavier Johnson. You know, those are the guys that are all on the bubble. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see any of them get drafted. I also wouldn't be surprised to see any of them go undrafted. You know, what won't surprise you is which one of those guys would I really bang the table for and draft him a seventh round? I would draft Xavier Johnson. I'm surprised that we're really not seeing Xavier Johnson in any mock drafts out there, because you think about what teams are looking for in the late rounds of the draft. A lot of times the ideal guys in those late rounds are guys that have versatility to play multiple roles and who are going to be able to come in and contribute on special teams immediately. And that's exactly what Xavier Johnson is. He's a guy who played the most special team snaps of any Buckeye for each of the last two seasons and did so an excellent job. He can play wide receiver. He can play running back. Probably is not going to be an NFL starter at either of those positions, but he's a guy that I think, when you talk about a 53-man roster in the NFL, I think he offers value that, you know, makes me confident whether he gets drafted or not. I believe Xavier Johnson will be on a 53-man roster this fall, because when you're always looking for guys who can fill multiple roles, because you do have a finite number of spots. It's not like a college football team where you have 85 guys. You have 53 guys. So you have to have guys who can do multiple things. And you look at Xavier Johnson, you know, he can play on any special teams unit. He can return kicks if you need him to, and he can be that, you know, backup. You know, he's probably a fourth or fifth wide receiver and a third or fourth running back on an NFL team. But if he can beat all of those things, he becomes a valuable back of a roster kind of player. And that's why I think he would be a great pick for somebody in the sixth or seventh round.
Certainly no shock that you would take Xavier Johnson with that bang the table pick there. I think Matt Jones is somebody who haven't seen in a ton of mock drafts, but I think he'd be good value for a team in the seventh round as well. A lot of experience playing offensive guard for Ohio State, and what he was able to do in terms of developing over the course of a very long and experienced college career. You know, with running backs, it's often viewed as a downside when a guy has a lot of reps on his body. The offensive lineman, it's kind of the opposite. You know, you want, because of the developmental nature of the position, you want a guy who's had a lot of collegiate starts, had a lot of experience. And I think, you know, multiple years as a starter for Matt Jones is a guy that fits that mold of, you know, late round value for a team. And I think there's a lot to like about him being a, you know, if you're taking a sixth or seventh round shot on a guy on the offensive line, there's a lot to like about Matt Jones.
I know that you wanted to give a couple of shout outs to some wrestlers from Ohio State that have had a good week.
Absolutely. You know, Jesse Mendez, I think just the run he's been on these last few months, winning the national championship, incredible what he did at the Olympic trials. I think, you know, a lot of people were expecting him to get eliminated fairly early in the competition. Just, you know, he's younger than these guys who have been professionals for years. You're facing a lot of people who have been graduated from college for a long time and closer to the, you know, the athletic primes of people in combat sports. Wrestling, I think, hits a little bit earlier just because of the competition level in college, but the athletic primes for people in combat sports usually are like early 30s, maybe late 20s. Mendez still, you know, early 20s kid here, but took down some really big names on route to finishing fourth. in the Olympic qualifying. You know, Yanni Diakomihalis, who won 4 national championships in college, was the biggest upset, but also beat 2017 world silver medalist James Green, former Ohio State Buckeye Joey McKenna. So fantastic run from him. And then Kyle Snyder continues to be Kyle Snyder. He won a gold medal while I was in college back in 2016. He's going to his 3rd straight Olympics, fresh off a silver medal performance in 2021, looking to get back on top of the podium. So those two wrestlers, real quick, wanted to give them a shout out because they're doing some big things there at the Olympic trials.
Yeah, we will certainly be intrigued to see what Captain America does at the Olympics in Paris this summer as the United States representative in the 97 kilogram bracket. And we will certainly be watching intently as the NFL draft unfolds this week, as the final week of the football transfer portal window for 2024 unfolds, and as the craziness that has been the basketball transfer portal continues to unfold, as Ohio State looks to fill the final 2 spots on its roster and hopefully not lose anybody else. And so we will be back next week to talk about all of that. Make sure you stay tuned with 11warriors.com for all of our NFL draft coverage to come over the next few days. And we'll talk to you again next week.